The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
There are lots of lousy businesses, and there's lots of wonderful businesses.
It's the art and science of money.
My job has been to try and figure out which is which.
It's Hi-Fi Radio from the Global News Radio studios in Toronto with Hi-Fi portfolio managers. Here's Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle.
Well, happy Saturday, my good friends, indeed. Thank you for spending some time with Jack and I. It's a show about money. We want you to have a whole lot of it. Little workshop. We learn as we go, and we get better each and every week. All of us. That's you, of course, at home that matters. Yes, indeed. We want to really take good care of you. And as such, we dig far and wide to find the finest minds to join us to have great in-depth money talk. A company on Bay Street, well-established, called Coldwell Investment Management. You could call them a friendly competitor of ours, but I'm in it for the collective good of all, and I work quite closely with many of our competitors, and we share ideas. And yes, there's no monopoly on great ideas, and as such, I like to generate relationships with fellow successful people on Bay Street, and I partner with great people. That's why Jack's a partner of mine. He's a great guy. Good evening, Jack. How are you, man?
Doing great, Wolf. Glad to be here this Saturday night.
Indeed. So Coldwell Investment, founded by a gentleman named Tom Coldwell, a real gentleman and an iconic individual on Bay Street, founded this company. Jennifer, how young is Coldwell Investments?
Founded in 1980.
Founded in 1980, yeah, by Tom Coldwell. Well, a very successful man. He continues to run the company with his son, now Brendan Coldwell. I used to go back-to-back with him on some BNN and CP24 interviews, and that's how I met Brendan. But I read a very good article from Coldwell talking about you're the top, the value of advice as you differentiate and try to stand out from the crowd. And in a world where everything has become free, the job of Jack and I every now and then is to communicate to clients the importance and the benefit of working with a professional team and not going it yourself. And, as I'm speaking right now to a roofer who's doing my roof, and of course he stops for a break and he checks the market. And I said, excuse me, why are you checking the market? Do you see me climbing on the roof, repairing my roof? No, do what you're good at and stay focused on it and work with a pro to help you build your portfolio. And I spoke to him about his portfolio, and it was in a silver stock, it was in a uranium stock, and another uranium stock. There was an oil stock in there and another silver stock. And I said to him, why don't you buy some commodities? And he said, I thought I had commodities. I said, that's all you have is commodity. Where's your tech? Where's your bank? Where's your cash? Where's your fixed income? Where's your portfolio? So building a portfolio and hanging onto clients' hands during turbulent times is immensely valuable. It could be worth tens of thousands of basis points, but who knows that better than Jennifer Radman? She's graciously spent some time with us this evening, or is going to spend some time with us this evening. She's currently on Wall Street, certainly living in the Manhattan area, but she's with Coldwell Investment. She is head of investments. She's a senior portfolio manager. I'm jealous that they have hired you. In fact, one day I'm going to hire someone like you to help Jack and I continue to build our practice. It's just amazing when companies hire smart people like you to help guide their brokers through the process. It's very, very important, Jennifer. So thank you for spending time with us this evening. I hope you're well.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, why don't we begin with Canada? Coldwell, of course, has its roots in Bay Street, and most Canadian firms have a dominant position in the Canadian marketplace. Canada has been out of favor for 7, 8, 9 years, Canadian dollar with it, but the last 12 to 18 months has been a bit of resurgence in the interest in the global investment community towards Canada. How significant is global interest in our market? How much interest are you currently noticing in the Canadian marketplace? And I think most importantly is at the margin, if it's very relevant, which it is, that the marginal buyer is a foreign investor, how long do you think this will run for to give us a bit of a competitive edge market-wise?
So the biggest difference we've seen is just from investment advisors. So we run a Canadian equity strategy that's done phenomenally well over the last 10 years. And biggest pushback when we were having conversations about that fund, it was really nobody wanted to be in Canada. And so for the longest time, the U.S. market was outperforming. You had the technology names, you had the healthcare names, and the resources were struggling. And so there wasn't really anything really attracting people to Canada. And that sentiment really changed over the last few months, where the Canadian market started to perform better, and technology at the same time started to, after hitting really record type earnings coming out of this COVID market in the summer of last year, started to lag in performance. And so it started to see a lot of investment advisors looking to shift those portfolios. And so even with that shift happening, it seems like there's quite a bit of runway for that to go, just because of the years and years of underperformance of the Canadian market. And so we think that's a pretty big driver without having to get even international investors interested in the Canadian market.
If you're just tuning in, of course, it's Hi-Fi Radio, Jack Hartle, Wolfgang Klein, each and every Saturday night on Global News 640 in Toronto. We spend an hour helping you have more money. Of course, if you have any questions for us, you can always find us at wolfgangklein.com. Or the wolf on baystreet.com. Jennifer Radman, she's a certified financial analyst. She's head of investments and a senior portfolio manager at Coldwell Investment Management. You have a North American fund that was formerly the Coldwell Balanced Fund. The way I like to manage money, Jennifer, primarily to Canadian investors, is to take a North American viewpoint. So if we're in a commodity cycle, I'll buy Canadian commodity stocks. And if we're in a tech cycle, I'll buy U.S. tech stocks. If I want some healthcare stocks, I'll buy U.S. If I want some REITs, I'll buy Canada. So it's funny, I pick sectors and I find which country is more favorable or easier to invest in, and away I go. So I tend not to buy Canadian techs because I find that they're overpriced because of a scarcity premium that tech gets here in Canada. And so many portfolio managers need to be there, i.e. Shopify, too expensive for my blood. All of that said, the way we sit today, Jennifer, how are you positioning your North American fund from a Canada-US point of view?
So I think it really depends on what you're trying to achieve with the strategy. And so on the Canadian equity side, we're very much nimble and quickly adjusting to the changes in the market. And so that's why if you look at our positioning across different sectors and the split between cyclical defensives has really shifted pretty dramatically. On our North American equity strategy, we call it more of a core portfolio, the Canadian equity being more of a satellite or something very complementary to what investors use as maybe their core Canadian equity. And so for that reason, we haven't done a lot of change within the last 12 months in that portfolio. We're really looking for these companies that over the next 3 or 5 years are just very high quality company. And, we like to say if the whole investment team gets hit by a bus, that we'd be very happy owning these types of companies for a 3 to 5 year period. And so that means owning things like technology, some things in the healthcare space. We do have a little bit of energy exposure, but really a very diversified portfolio in different types of business lines. And so that's really the strategy there.
What are your top three holdings in that fund?
So right now we see some pretty good opportunities on the U.S. defense side. So something like an L3Harris. And the whole defense group really has underperformed pretty significantly just with the change in the U.S. Government to shift to Democratic and the thinking that, they're just not going to spend a lot of budget dollars on defense. The interesting thing about L3Harris is they do have a lot of sort of self-help levers that we like. So they, off the back of an acquisition a couple of years ago, still a lot of upside there. But the whole space has been really depressed, so we really like that. Something like a Visa is another interesting stock that it really has elements of a COVID recovery story in it. They make a lot of money on the international travel piece. It really hasn't kind of traded well this year, and so we think there's some good upside in that story. In Canada, we really like Tricon Residential, very, very strong in markets on the U.S. housing side. They're located in the U.S. South, Sun Belt, and so a lot of positive demographics. They just signed a big deal gaining third-party capital, and so just a very nice justification of the strategy that they're running. And the stock's really been it capped in this trading range for years and years and years, despite improving fundamentals. And so it finally broke through that trading range. We think there's a lot of upside there, and this thing's just getting started. So those would be some of our larger holdings in that fund.
Well, let's continue. I'm enjoying this the way we're going. Give me a couple more names that you guys are quite confident in, or you have a big, or that you have a big position in within the fund. Hence, you must be confident in the idea.
Yeah. So let's see. What else are our larger weightings? An Element Fleet. There's a bit of a restructuring story going on there, where the company's now. So the way most restructuring stories work is, one, you have your first phase, which is fixing the business. They've done a phenomenal job doing that. And then now you're moving over to the growth phase. And so they sort of outlined that growth plan about a year ago. We kind of got into this COVID market that's delayed that a little bit, but still a lot of, again, to the point of those self-help levers, where we feel there's a lot of growth opportunity in the name there. Let's see, United Health, that's just a very strong company that we think you can own for years and years, providing kind of commercial health insurance and in the U.S. and have all sorts of, they've done a good job of vertically integrating the ecosystem and really growing value through that strategy and very strong executors. And so similar to, that whole space has also underperformed, similar narrative to the U.S. defense names. And so we do feel there's a catch-up trade there. And if you look at just the valuation multiples on that group, still pretty discounted relative to the rest of the market.
We speak with Jennifer Radman, call into Wall Street to find out what she's up to. She's a head of investments and a senior portfolio manager at Coldwell. Yeah, we're drilling into some stock names. It's a lot of fun. And I got a great quote this morning from Peter Lynch. And it is, if you don't understand or know the companies you're investing in, that is akin to playing poker without looking at your cards. It's Hi-Fi Radio, Global News 640 in Toronto. I'm Wolfgang Klein, Portfolio Manager, Lead Portfolio Manager at the Wolf on Bay Street. Jack Hartle, my wingman, Key Strategist, Portfolio Manager as well. And Jennifer Radman, spending some time with us. We're going to take a quick break and get right back to some money talk here on Global News 640.
Money. Let's take a break. But after, Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Pick me up Saturday night, my good friends. Jennifer Radman, head of investments and senior portfolio manager, Coldwell Investment Management, spending some time with us. She's a market strategist, shall I say, lead portfolio manager. She knows her stuff. It's a delight to spend some time with her. Of course, she's in New York, land of the free. So I gave you some freedom there. You know, I grew into George Michaels. I really, really did. At first, when he came out, I wasn't into him. But over time, yeah, you are able to change. And, you know, change is so important. Markets change, things change. It's been an incredible bull market. Again, I saw a great piece from one of our competitors, but friendly competitor, Fidelity, looking at valuation, Jennifer, of the markets. Getting quite mathematical and complex, but that's okay. That's what they do, and they do it well. And they're just basically looking at cash flow, discounting the cash flow, throwing some additional variables into the equation like inflation, interest rates, growth rates, and trying to value markets and quite sophisticatedly to see, you know, where are we at in the cycle. And the conclusion was the bull market is alive and well. It'll probably run for another 5 to 7 years. And the most expensive asset class are not stocks, rather they are bonds. And there's no bubble per se in the stock market. However, yes, against many metrics, it's stretched, and it could be argued that it's stretched by 50%. So the goalpost, Jennifer, seems quite wide in that, you know, the market's trading at a 25 PE multiple. You normalize it at 15, factor in the growth rate. The market could take a 50% haircut. And I always warn clients, friends, family, markets, you know, in the short term can be very volatile. And yes, prepare yourself for the worst. And if you do that, you're going to get through it and succeed time and time again. And again, this goes back to, Jennifer, the article that your company wrote about the importance of advice. And I can't tell you, Jennifer, how many sophisticated, super high net worth clients I have who during a crisis call me and say, should we get out? And you know, often based on the narrative that we have seen, which has been correct, that we're in a longstanding bull market that may go to the end of this decade, the answer is no, you should not get out. You should send us more money and buy when things are on sale. Had that those clients exited, it would have been several times, and Jack's smiling because he knows exactly who I'm referring to. It's my contrarian indicator client, but he always calls us when the news is bad and the market already is down anywhere from 5 to 15%. Only about to turn the corner, you know, within minutes or hours and stage new highs. So with that backdrop, Jennifer, we got into a bit of stock talk, and we maybe conclude the interview with a bit more of your favorite stock ideas. But let's start with some market talk first. How do you feel about the valuations of stocks versus bonds and where we are in the economic cycle? I'm going to ask you the retail question. Is this a good time to invest in the market?
Yes, there's a lot there. You know, part of investing in why you use a professional is just to understand why you're investing. So to the point of you're a roofer and he has five stocks in their portfolio and they all have the same drivers and there's absolutely zero diversification there. Anybody in the investment industry has had that person come to him and say, hey, have you heard of this company or this stock? Here's a really good buy. And my question to them is always, well, what do they do? And often they have no idea. And then the second question, which they really don't know, is, you know, are they profitable? And so that's where professional advice comes in, not only from understanding whether you're picking stocks and advisor by yourself or using third-party managers such as myself and our team here at Coldwell. It's really understanding the strategy and what the purpose of that investment is. And then pair that where the advice comes in is really understanding the cash needs for those investments and what you're ultimately looking to do. So, you know, a number of things that are pretty scary. You know, there's nothing like a 10-year bull market to switch people's risk tolerances. And so we see people, you know, they were very conservative and now they've seen, you know, people make boatloads of money in the market and now they want to get more aggressive. Probably not the right time to do that. If you have been aggressive and, you know, you need that money for either paying for school or paying for a house or something, might make sense to take some off the table. If you don't need it for the next decade, then there's really no reason to do anything with it. Just stick to your strategy. But, you know, that's very hard to do as an individual without having somebody to really bounce that idea off of and be that kind of a gut check when emotions come into play. Because if you are investing in the stock market, no question, there will be emotions coming into play. And so that is really the value that we see of the investment advisor is providing that emotional gut check.
Yeah, no, sage, sound, logical, experienced guidance and advice are worth more than their weight in gold, probably worth their weight in Bitcoin, which, by the way, is down some 50%. Take that for what it's worth. Jennifer, what keeps you up at night?
So, you know, there was a great sort of book that talked about how quickly economies can change and businesses can change within that, and then, you know, stocks and sentiment. And so we're seeing sentiment moves pretty quickly in the market. And so it would just be, you know, pairing. You know, we do our research on companies, but that doesn't always make sense. And one of the biggest things we're hearing when working with investment advisors across the country and the conversations they're having with their own clients is, you know, what's up with this disconnect with markets making new highs, stocks doing incredibly well, and what's going on Main Street? Because things are just still so broken to some degree. And you talk about the supply chains and not being able to go out and buy basic things that you would have pre-COVID, and people not being able, or businesses not being able to hire people, and this lack of or shortage of labor. And so there are all these problems, yet the market's making new highs. And so within that context, you always have kind of this potential for these big drawdowns, and we've seen a number of them. So the fourth quarter of 2018 was a pretty big spike down, and then a equally kind of aggressive spike up. So you had that V-shape. You had the V-shape early in 2020 with the COVID market. And so, you know, but again, that's where investment advisors come in. So as long as you know what you're investing for, you have the plan, those shouldn't be a problem. It's really, you know, the biggest fear is that people kind of don't have the right game plan and get caught in those and end up doing more damage to themselves than they would if you know, they had a broader team around them.
Yeah, no, massive value statement you're making there. And again, you know, Jack and I now have 20 years of experience under our belt, and boy, did that time fly. But again, Jack, you, first of all, from an economic point of view, that little piece you sent me about the current recession, why don't you share that with Jennifer and then parlay that into a Q&A with her?
Yeah, it's funny. I just came across the article today, and it stated that I don't know which economic economic team came up with this, but basically the recession ended in April of 2020. So I sent that along to Wolfgang. It's always funny to get these.
No, but sorry, Jack. It began in March, ended in April. I think that's what's the funny. Right.
It began in March, ended in April. But the fact is, if you wait for the news to be good, if you wait for things to be improving, so the recession ended in April, and the market is up probably 100% since then. And, you know, back in the crisis, back in, you know, the liquidity crisis of March 2020, I had a number of clients, and a few of them exited the market, not based on our advice, based on the fear of the market and maybe a misalignment of how they're positioned versus, you know, what their you know, their true risk tolerance was. Because like you said, a 10-year bull market, you know, gives people a lot of confidence. But the fact was that they really bailed at the wrong time. And if you wait for things to be good, and that's what they said, I'm going to leave the market now and wait for things to be better before I enter the market again, you can see that the S&P 500 is up 100% since then. So maybe you could speak to that in terms of, you know, investor behavior. And, you know, you do have to have an element of risk and uncertainty if you are expecting to get outsized returns in equity markets.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this goes into the past question, you know, the things that keep you up at night, and it's really knowing what's priced into a given stock. And so unlike, you know, if you go put on a bet with your sports team, you at least know what the spread is. And so you know what the over-under is. With stocks, it's not like that at all. You have to kind of take some type of a guess at what's priced in. And, you know, to the point of markets being so forward-looking, if we look at our Canadian equity strategy, which, again, is very active in pivoting to where the market's going, we started increasing that exposure to cyclical names in the summer, in June of 2020. And so you think back at that time, like, that was, I don't want to say crazy, but nobody was talking about that narrative at the same time. There was still a lot of uncertainty. We didn't know how governments were going to respond. We didn't know any type of a timeline on a vaccine or whether one was even viable. And yet the market was rotating into these stocks that were recovering at the same time. Whereas, you know, the intuitive thing would be, like, hey, all these technology stocks are going to do great in this environment. By the time those second quarter earnings rolled around, they were reporting record results, huge beats versus estimates. And yet the stocks didn't go higher and actually started rolling over. And so it's just, it shows how forward looking the market is. And how tough it is, you know, to just put on buy a stock on kind of common sense type of investing. And so, you know, fast forward to where we are today, there's a lot of stimulus dollars in the market. You have a lot of the developed world vaccinated. And so now the question is, OK, what's priced in? And just over the last month, it feels like there maybe is, you know, given the underlying rotation with what's working in the market, maybe the market's, you know, just trying to figure out that that positioning going forward. And we really won't know the narrative until we kind of get a few months past this time. So yeah, markets are just very, very forward looking, and sometimes it's hard to know exactly what they're pricing in.
But again, Jennifer and Jack, you say this line frequently, and it's great, and you are the hockey guy on the team, but you have to be Wayne Gretzky, right, Jack? And what was Wayne Gretzky's line?
Well, he's always looking to where the puck's going to be going, not where it's been.
Right. You have to look to where is the puck going to go, and that's where you want to be now. And that's a difficult thing to do, because you have to often be earlier to the event to get a good seat and get a good risk reward ratio. And that's the name of the game. I'd love to chat with you more, Jennifer, but we have to pivot over to, again, another friendly competitor, Marc-André Gaudreau. He's with Dynamic Funds. He's with the credit team. So we're going to talk about debt and bonds and go from there. Jennifer, I want to wish you a wonderful Saturday night. Enjoy your beautiful city. You're well vaccinated, well unlocked. Continue to be safe and enjoy your evening. I want to thank you very kindly for spending some time with us. It was fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Friends, we're going to take a quick break and get right back to the show about money. It's called Hi-Fi Radio on Global News 640 in Toronto.
Don't go anywhere. There's more great show after this. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Because we are living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Come and get me, boys.
Or put it on the Ritz, eh? Indeed, it is Hi-Fi Radio. That's a little jazz fidelity, Moulin Rouge style, for our next guest. Live from Montreal, my good friends, it is Monsieur Marc-André Gaudreau with Dynamic Mutual Funds. Marc-André, bonsoir, mon ami, ça va?
Ça va très bien. Nice to, you know, very glad to be on the show here.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate you spending some time with us. So you are with Dynamic Mutual Funds, and you're the head of the credit team, which means you are responsible for managing about $5 billion in bonds, credit-related assets, both investment-grade corporate debt, some preferred shares, high yield, aka junk bonds, floating rate notes, credit absolute return strategies. Friends listening to the show right now, again, in building a portfolio, the stock portion of a portfolio is one area of discussion, which we just had with our last guest. The more complicated and an equally important part of a portfolio is the part that we're going to talk about right now with Mark, and that's the debt side of things. Building a really good debt portfolio is complicated. And I'm the first to admit I couldn't do it myself here on Bay Street. I would always lean to a team like Mark's, who can focus on the global availability of fixed income and build a proper portfolio. So, Mark, thank you very much for spending time with us. And again, I got a bit of noise in the background. I apologize. You, I have to say, every time I bring a bond manager on, you have a very difficult job, almost as difficult as the roofers who are right now reshingling my roof. Building a bond portfolio in a zero interest rate environment, central bank pedal to the metal printing of money, how do you do it, and where are the opportunities? Or is this a matter of, hey, this portion of our assets, all we're gonna do is focus on preservation of wealth until rates get back into more normalized fashion and we can start making 5 and 7 points again on a fixed income, but between now and then is just basically bury your head in the sand and hang on for a dear life, or not? Share with us what you're doing and how you're going about it, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, you always need to tell a bit of offense with defense when it's time to investing. And the fixed income part has basically played more the defense side, which provided investors with two main investment benefits, I would say, to a kind of a diversified portfolio. The first one is to provide a reasonable level of income, and the second benefit of fixed income is basically a portfolio insurance when there's economic catastrophe, which basically is what we got a little over a year ago, where, you know, your equity portfolio goes down significantly because of the recession, and your fixed income side, in addition to providing you the income part, basically provides you with capital gain to offset part of the losses on the equity side. So that has been the main benefit of the fixed income over the past decades. And when we look at the facts today, as you pointed out, with central bankers, government bringing down rates to basically zero, and even worse than that in Europe, in Japan, negative. So the income component is actually no longer available or very slim. And also the capital gain potential, given the starting point, is a lot lower. So when you look at investors, you basically need to either adjust your return expectations for the facts today, as you pointed out. I mean, it's more capital preservation. Or look at diversification a bit more in fixed income. So those are the two options for investors. You know, we manage a lot of capital as well for pension plans. And when you look at those, you know, large pension plans over the past couple of decades, they've basically reduced both the equity and the fixed income and basically went to what we would call alternative investments or strategies. So basically trying to capture a little bit more income, but a bit less correlation with, the equity market. So that has been another area that investors could look at.
So Marc-André, I have to ask then, when it comes to alternatives, are you able to incorporate alternative fixed incomes into your portfolio? And give us some examples if that is the case.
Well, we do have alternative fixed income solutions available to both our institutional clients and our retail clients. And basically, the goal here is to try to meet client needs, which is basically earn a reasonable level of return and also have low correlation to kind of your traditional two asset classes. So we do launch over 7 or 8 years ago one alternative strategy, which we call credit absolute return, that basically provides investors with mid-single digit return without the correlation to traditional fixed income. So whether central bankers, bring down rates or increase rates, it basically has really no impact on, the return profile of the strategy. So this is, again, a solution that allows my team the flexibility of credit selection without worrying about the interest rate duration to it. And we do all this while remaining with a very high credit quality of investment grade, so not taking on default risk. So we do have strategies available to the clients to look for diversification. And there are other strategies, obviously, available to investors on both the public and private side.
Right. We're speaking with Marc-André Gaudreau. He's with Dynamic Funds. He's a bond manager, managing over $5 billion. When you're that big, they call you Monsieur. It's iFi Radio, Global News, 640 in Toronto. I'm Wolfgang Klein. Going to spend some more time with Marc-André, learn more about the credit markets. I want to talk to him about preferred shares. I want to talk to him about high-yield bonds and maybe some leverage loans and floating rate paper. Complicated stuff, but it perhaps fits well into your portfolio to reduce risk and generate some income for you. We're all getting older. Income does matter. Stay tuned. More show right after this.
Listen, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, more money talk. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Yep, when we play that, we usually take a quick drive to Montreal, either to speak to our own strategist, Mr. Martin Roberge, or today we're speaking to Marc-André Gaudreau. He's with Dynamic Funds. He manages a $5 billion worth of credit. When you buy credit instruments, you want some safety, and Safety Dance plus Montreal, it's all fitting together. It's a big potpourri of money talk here on the show, of course. If you have any questions, by the way, any interest in speaking further with Jack and I to see if we can perhaps help you build wealth, as we have for our 300 families who have worked with us. And I'm very proud to say we don't have a single client who has lost money with us, those who have taken our advice and stuck with us. They're all winners. Of course, you have to deal with the volatility. It's real, and it will always come back, but we will get you through it. And part of getting through volatile times, and again, the more nervous you are, the more important this discussion is for you, because it's about keeping your money safer. Marc, I'm going to speak with, if you don't mind, begin with junk bonds. A very simple ETF that I own for clients and have held it for some time. And Jack's always a little leery of it and warning me of it for good reason. It's the CHB. It's just an iShares high yield US fixed income. And I'm buying it basically because it's a bunch of corporate debt that is considered high yield, therefore junk status. That means its credit rating is below double B plus, I believe. But I'm getting paid 4.7%. Beats 1% or less on a treasury bill of a 10-year duration. But without question, this does have volatility to it, but not that much in that it's trading $18 right now. And during the COVID crises, I don't think it got much below 16. Right now, the annual low on it, the 52-week low, is actually 17, which is about a 5% haircut. The stock market can be down 5% in 3 days. So again, you can just by basic math see that this is a much more stable instrument. How do you feel currently about high yield bonds? But also want you then talk about preferred shares as an alternative to generate, you know, a 3 to 5% rate of return with that dividend you get.
Yeah, I'm going to start with the high yield market. I mean, we do manage a number of high yield, actively managed high yield solutions, and I would say that given where we are right now. From a economic standpoint, as you know, we talked about very strong stimulus from both fiscal and monetary. The asset class is actually quite attractive. Maybe not in absolute, but in relative, it's quite attractive. A lot more correlated to the economic reopening. So. Companies that were weak defaulted in 2020, and companies who survive are actually thriving right now. So from a fundamental standpoint, it is a good time. We expect default rates to basically reach all-time lows. So your income should continue to be there. From a valuation standpoint,
obviously. Sorry, Mark, do you mind if I want to interrupt you because you made a point again. This is a working workshop for Jack and I too. You're smarter than I. I know that you manage more money than I do, and that is by default means you're smarter than I am. What are current default means, friends at home? When they use the word default, that means that the borrower, and here we're talking high yield, so the company is unable to make an interest payment. They have to pay interest to service that debt every 6 months, usually, maybe semi-annual or quarterly. They fail to make an interest payment. Doesn't mean they can't pay back their principal. If they fail to make an interest payment, that's called default. What is the current default rate that you've seen in the marketplace?
The long-term average default rate for the high yield market, and that's going back to basically the 80s, has been about 4%. So when a company defaults, as you pointed out, they stop paying your interest. And given that you're a senior creditor, you usually have a recovery rate. So you basically wipe out equity holders. So common shares are gone. You liquidate the asset, and your recovery has been on average about 40 cents on a dollar. So this is the long-term average.
The current default rate is what?
It's running right now below 2%, so below the long-term
average. Yeah. Can we talk about the preferred share market briefly? Then Jack wants to talk about reaching for yield and throw a few questions at you.
The preferred share market, it's, as you pointed out, it's very, very similar risk profile to high yield, whereby you have a higher income component. And as you know, dividend income is more attractive, I guess, relative to your traditional income from a taxation standpoint. So you earn something similar to your high yield. That being said, when there's a risk off, it has a similar drawdown to high yield. In fact, we've seen even higher drawdown because the cost of capital of companies is going up. So very similar risk profile. I would say that currently there is something specific to the Canadian preferred share market, which you don't have in the US, is that this market is shrinking in size. It's extremely rare that you see that. And the main reason for it is the financials that are issuing a lot of preferreds are now able to raise cheaper capital from traditional fixed income corporate investors and basically optimize their cost of capital. So they're redeeming, taking out preferred shares, and then reissuing kind of bond-like securities. So that is something very specific to Canadian preferred shares. So from a supply and demand standpoint, you have this kind of tailwind support for the Canadian preferred share market, which we think is going to last maybe for another year.
That's very interesting because the market was being hit with massive amounts of supply. So the exact opposite, a company would issue a preferred share and 6 months later issue another one and another one. It was diluted.
That was basically in 2015 and 16, right?
Yeah. Mr. Marc-André, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us this Saturday night. The credit market is complex, as I began the show. You've shed some additional light on it. I appreciate that. Again, if you're looking for alternatives, my friends, to putting money out of the mattress or getting zero return in your high interest savings account, give us a call. WolfgangKlein.com. Jack Hartle and I would be happy to sit down and discuss with you alternative strategies to help you build more wealth. That's what it's all about, helping you build more wealth. It's Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday night. It's a privilege to spend an hour with you. I want to wish you a safe evening. Jack, thank you very much for doing a great job setting the show up this Saturday night. And Mark, my good friend, you go do that safety dance on St. Denis Street. The city is soon to open, begin to open up, and I wish you a bon journée, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
All the best. My friends, that's it for the show. You be safe.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any money questions you need answered, email Wolf and Jack at WolfgangKlein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. We'll see you next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.